Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch signals Wednesday, 8 p.m. And it's time for So What's Your Story. We're the only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to live storytelling. And we are right here on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM Houston. I'm Hank Rubicek, stepping in for Warren Holloman this evening, who's a little bit under the weather, and he's going to be fine in just a couple of days. But I'm happy to be here because we have got a fabulous, fabulous program. But, you know, I am part of a very cool team on radio. Each week, Warren, Greg, Mary, Tatiana, and I celebrate the power of story by bringing you remarkable tellers who take us on captivating journeys, and then they return us safely home to the present. And the stories that we share not only entertain, but also to help us understand who we are, what we believe, and what values we hold dear. Storytelling connects the human condition. We stretch the boundaries of the human heart. And tonight we've got a studio full of great storytellers, and they're all here to talk about the joys and challenges of living in Houston. Whether it's the congestion on our highways during rush hour or the potholes that turn our roads into obstacle courses, one day more like really 297 days, we're really battling the summer heat, and the next day we're battling an epic hurricane. You know, on the surface at least, tonight's stories are about concrete things, literally, like our roads, our traffic, our weather. But tonight's stories are also about the deeper things that serve as softer landscapes to those concrete icons: resilience, family, the kindness of strangers, and what it means to be a community. I mentioned that we have a studio full of great storytellers, another literal message, because the second half of our show tonight will feature the funny, insightful stories of Sarit Manjaluri, a former high school teacher who is now a physician, playwright, and storyteller, and that's just on Mondays. But we're going to start with a crew of actors and artists who will demonstrate that sometimes it really does take a village to tell a good story. And the mayor of sorts of this village is a returning guest to So What's Your Story, Rachel Dixon. Rachel is the president of Scriptwriters Houston, and she was a longtime faculty member at UHD. And Rachel, we're going to start with you. First of all, welcome back to this show. Thanks. Right? I asked you earlier if you ever thought you'd come back.
Yes.
But you can't stay away from great things.
That's right.
Right?
Storytelling.
And you have to admit, I don't mean to ask you a leading question, but there are very few shows better than this one. So why would you not want to come back?
It's the perfect place to be.
There you go. See, I know that. You ask a reasonable question, you get a reasonable answer. You bet. You were here on June 12, 2014, telling some of your own stories. But tonight, you're here to help us tell stories that others have written. First, tell us a little bit about Scriptwriters.
Sure. Scriptwriters Houston has been around for about 30 years. Our focus, cause, and interest is in professional scriptwriting and theater through critiques, educational programs. We do workshops, seminars, and the production of works of its members. So opportunities for writers to write, both for stage and for film.
Yeah, we are one of the very wonderful venues and theater in this city, which is still underestimated. We have a fabulous cultural community. Every year, Scriptwriters, I know, hosts a 10-10, which is 10 plays at 10 minutes each, play festival. And I just pretty much gave the answer. But what is the purpose of 10-minute only?
10-minute only gives a writer an opportunity to delve in, develop characters quickly, create the arc of a piece, and do it in a short span of time.
And you really can't do it in a short period of time.
You can. Yeah. You can. I've seen pieces as short as 30 seconds, and they're amazing when they're done well.
And, you know, and I really understand that concept, because we come from similar disciplines. But, you know, in storytelling, sometimes people are amazed that they can tell a story in 3 to 4 minutes, get to the conflict, create the tension, establish the plot, create the protagonist, bring it to closure. And they're amazed that that can happen, but it does.
It does.
So it's not unlike theater, when we can really work within that confined time period and make something happen, right? In fact, 10-10, this starts tomorrow night, I believe. And I believe the theme of this year's 10-10 will be very familiar to Houstonians, and that is?
Right, the Harvey Experience.
Harvey Experience.
10 by 10s this year will focus on anything related to Harvey.
Yes, and you know, that's a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a lot. And most of it has nothing to do with the weather.
Mm-hmm.
But just so our listeners will be aware of the dramas that's unfolding in our studio, all the cast and crew are supposed to be at dress rehearsal right now, but Rachel, with her dramatic presence and creative ingenuity, has kidnapped the director and three actors, although Dylan is not here, so we only have two. And she's used her persuasive skills to coax them to perform for us one of the plays to which we were referring, mm-hmm. featured in this week's showcase. Now, the play is by Houston playwright Fernando Dovalina, mm-hmm. and it's called Mysterious Ways, right?
Mm-hmm. That's it.
I'm going to call on Kelvin. Kelvin, tell us a little bit who you are and tell us why you wanted to direct this, and then set up what we're about to hear, please.
Yes. Hi. Thank you so much for having us here, Hank.
You bet.
Mysterious Ways was written by Fernando Dovalina, as you just stated. He is a wonderful playwright. And the thing that's so great about it is that Houston has so many great playwrights. And when you're involved in the performing arts community in the city, you get to know such great writers as Fernando. So the piece that we're going to perform for you tonight, it is a play involving three characters, major characters. We have God, we have Jesus, and we have a Southern preacher. And what this Southern preacher does, he gets an opportunity to have a conversation with God, believe it or not. But there's a little catch to it as it relates to this conversation. So we'll see if everybody can get what the little catch is here, okay?
Great. And Kelvin Douglas, the director. And Kelvin, you are going to be reading for Dylan, correct?
Yes, I am.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
All right. Anytime you gentlemen are ready.
All right.
Oh my goodness, you're God.
As a matter of fact.
But you're so young.
I like this particular age.
How old are you?
30-ish.
Ish?
I like to talk, you know, like young people do, millennial speak.
And you're black.
You noticed. Yes, I made many of you in my image. Others, not so much.
Oh my. So where am I?
Home Depot.
What?
Good grief, dude. You're talking to God. Where do you think you are?
In heaven? I'm dead?
No, you're at the Grammys. Of course you're dead. Are you surprised?
Why, yes.
And that is because?
You didn't warn me.
I never warn anybody.
But you talk to me all the time.
I do? Give me an example.
Well, you told me that you punished America because it tolerated gays and lesbians.
I never.
And you said that you punished Mississippi with a hurricane for allowing gambling casinos.
I never said such things.
But I distinctly heard you.
No, you distinctly heard yourself, bro.
What are you suggesting?
As a rule, God does not suggest. What I am saying...
Are you saying I'm crazy?
As a rule, God is never interrupted.
Oh, sorry, God.
That's more like it.
So?
When you claimed you heard me...
Oh, I didn't just claim it. I heard you all right. Oh, I interrupted you again, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
Sorry.
You are forgiven this time. Now, when you claimed that you heard me, you were either lying...
No, I wasn't. Oh, damn, I did it again.
And you used the D word. Only God can use the D word.
You curse?
Oh, yes. But when I say damn you, it's not the same as when you say damn you. Understand what I'm saying?
Look, I'm sorry I interrupted. Should I ask for forgiveness again?
Waste of time.
Oh, dear.
When you claimed you heard me, you either were lying or you thought you heard me. Which is it?
Well, I'm not so sure.
But you were so sure when you told your congregation that I talked to you.
Yeah, I know.
Look, I happen to know that you're not crazy.
So you're ruling out that I thought that I heard you?
So many that's. But yeah, that's right.
But God, that means that you think I was lying. But I didn't think I was lying.
I know.
What does that mean?
Think about it.
I don't know.
Think about it some more.
Okay. Let me be logical about this.
That's a good thing to try for a change.
Are you saying that I'm not logical?
I give all my children brains. And I expect them to use those brains. And not just follow what somebody wrote down on an ancient papyri millennia ago about what they thought I was thinking.
Are you saying...
What do you think?
Oh, God!
Yes?
It's just a saying!
I know, buddy. I was just kidding. God has a sense of humor. Although too often, I must say. He veers off into third person. Hate it when he does that.
Oh, that's funny, too.
Yes, I know. I think about going on Jimmy Kimmel.
Oh, that's hilarious.
I wasn't joking.
Oh.
Don't you think I will be good on Kimmel?
Why, yes, of course.
I would kill on Jimmy Kimmel.
Yes.
Well, not literally, of course. Or maybe I should try Ellen DeGeneres.
You like Ellen DeGeneres?
Yes. She's one of my favorite creations. She's freaking funny, and she's kind and generous.
I have not been kind to all my brothers and sisters, have I?
You said it, and that's good. Now, where were we?
What, you forgotten?
Oh, don't be ridiculous. But yes, where were we? Oh, yeah, I expect them to use those brains. And I follow what somebody wrote down on the ancient papyri millennia ago about what they thought I was thinking. Are you saying, and I said, what do you think? Oh, go preach it, man.
Okay. I told people I knew what you were thinking.
Correct.
And I'm not crazy, so I didn't imagine I heard you in my ear or in my head. So that leaves that I was lying, but I don't think I was lying.
Which only leaves?
I honestly thought that's what you were thinking.
Correct. And what sin is that?
Sin? Well, I don't know. Foolishness?
Come on. Foolishness is not a sin. If foolishness was a sin, then Kanye West would be in hell.
But he's not in hell.
I don't know. He's married to a Kardashian, ain't he? Where were you?
I thought I knew what you were thinking.
Yes.
Oh, God. I have been prideful.
Bingo. And I do love bingo. Understand, everyone who is arrogant at heart is an abomination to the Lord. Be assured he will not go unpunished.
Oh, Lord, Proverbs 16:5.
Correct.
An abomination.
Well, don't worry too much about all that. Somebody threw way too many abominations into my book. You know, pork is an abomination, shrimping is an abomination, Jesus H. Christ.
Dad?
Oh, for crying out loud, son, it's just a saying.
I know, it's just a saying, Dad. I was just being, you know, cute.
Oh, Lord, Jesus, that's just not a saying.
Dad thinks I'm cute. Don't you love it when your dad says nice things about you?
Yeah, son. You know, we were just talking about pork and shrimp.
Oh, God, I love pork and shrimp, God. Was that confusing?
No, now, why would I create such delicious things as bacon and shrimp?
Right, to say nothing of shrimp wrapped in bacon.
If I didn't want you to eat them.
Right. When I was in Beelzebub down in hell, he introduced me to jalapeno stuffed with shrimp and wrapped in bacon. They were so hot. You know, generally, we don't have hot stuff up here.
So, what happens to me now?
You get a second chance. You go back to Earth.
But I thought, you said I was dead.
You are. But nobody's found your body yet.
But why not? I was in my office, and well, somebody should have looked in on me by now. Why haven't they? I mean, if I hadn't called somebody to do this or that by now, why haven't they checked in on me?
Because they don't like you.
I beg your pardon?
Look, you'll wake up and go on about your business. I give you 3 instructions. 1, stop with all the God told me crap. It really bothers me. Everybody thinks they know what God thinks, including the person who would end up writing about this encounter. 2, be nicer to my children. And 3, stop eating so many donuts.
Ooh, Krispy Kremes is one of your greatest creations, Dad.
Oh, cut back on donuts, but I love donuts.
Yes, but Krispy Kreme donuts is what killed you. Everything in moderation, kiddo. And start jogging. And when you jog, enjoy my trees and my birds and my telephone poles.
Telephone poles?
I plan on trying that on Kimmel. Or DeGeneres. Or maybe even Colbert. That Trump stick, it slays me. What you think? Okay, well, get out of here.
Thank you, Lord.
Hey, Dad. When Trump dies, can we be Mexicans? He'll enter and ask if I'm Jesus, and I'll say, no, Donald, my name is Jesus. And I'll say, how do you get through the wall, Donald?
Oh, my son has my sense of humor. Hey, son, get this.
Wait.
When Bill O'Reilly comes through the gate, I'll play the greeter as a woman.
Yeah, Dad, with a whip in your hand. And there we have it.
Yeah, What a pleasant surprise that is. My gosh. That is the consummate ensemble performance. If you're just joining us, this is So What's Your Story on 90.1 FM KPFT Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.1 in Huntsville, and online on www.kpft.org. I'm Hank Rubicek with Tatiana Gago, and we are here with artists from Scriptwriters Houston, and they've just performed one of the plays featured in this year's showcase, Mysterious Ways by Fernando Dovalina. Mysterious Ways, how did that name come about?
Well, you know, God works in mysterious ways.
Yes, right. That was the obvious one, right.
Well, you know, God created life creates opportunities, as Harvey did, for people to face their own mortality and consider how they interact with others. So, mysterious.
Talk about that great insight again, Rachel. Harvey created opportunities.
Harvey created opportunities for people to be heroes, for people to make changes, for people to find some inner self. And in this particular case, Mr. Dovalina intended for us to think about mortality, like Harvey made us think about it. What is your journey? What path are you taking? And that can be a mysterious journey.
I wanted to ask the right person. I wanted to ask God. God, what kind of opportunity do you think Harvey did provide to us? To be a hero?
I definitely believe it. It allowed people to open up and not be so closed in. It made us see life different, and not just lending out a helping hand, but also showing real true love. You know, with all the things that went on with that particular situation, I feel like it made the city come together once more.
And Patrick, you really have to believe that. I was being a little facetious before, but not really. I mean, you have to believe that in playing your part.
Yes, sir.
Don't you? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Patrick Brown is God, and Dylan DeWitt, who is not here today, plays Jesus. But I got to tell you, Kelvin, you did a great job at playing his son. Wonderful job. And the preacher is played by Mac Dermott. And the play was directed again by Kelvin Douglas. And gentlemen, thank you for coming in the studio tonight. I know that you've got to leave in a few minutes, but before you do, I've got to ask Patrick and Dylan, you know, what was it like to play the roles of God and Jesus? Dylan, you know, is not here, can you kind of fill that in for us, Kelvin? What was this like playing Jesus tonight?
It was very humbling. It's a very humbling experience, because as you're talking about Harvey, you know, you get to see humanity. And when you like get an opportunity to be like a character like Jesus, if you know anything about Jesus, you know that, you know, I think that's one of the things that he wants us to understand, that humanity doesn't see color. It doesn't see race or sex. So it was an honor, and it definitely makes you reflect on what you believe in and, you know, what's important at the end of the day.
Yeah. And, you know, and I mean, this is a sort of a learning point, even for those who may not believe in Jesus. You know, my grandmother was a Holocaust survivor, and she was Jewish, of course. And I will never forget this incredible short story where she was talking to a very good friend of ours who was a Methodist minister living down the street. He was over all the time, eating cookies, drinking tea, talking to my grandmother. They were best of friends. It was really a remarkable relationship. And I was about 10 years old, I think, when I was walking in the kitchen, getting something to eat, and the two of them were talking. And he's talking about Jesus, and he's talking about the scriptures, and he's talking and talking very passionately. And then he turns to my grandmother and asks Rose was her name, Rose, what do you think about all of that? And she said, he was an honest, wonderful boy, but God, you know, and I'll never forget that. And it was just a wonderful moment. It was that connectivity that we get with that kind of a character.
Definitely.
We really do. Mac, what about playing a preacher? Was that natural for you?
Well, it certainly did
a great job.
Thanks. Well, it's part of my, in a prior life, shall I say, going back about, you know, my early young adulthood, I was involved in evangelical ministry for 20 years. And when I first started, of course, it was more or less in suburbia, where most of the ministry, of course, was with a white pastor, a white congregation. Right. And as I drew myself more into the inner city, I got to more experience more of the true gospel ministry of working with everyone of every type, of every walk, black, white, yellow, Hispanic, you know, all sorts of different people, different lives. And I learned how to become more accepting of others through that. And so now in this particular case with this script, I'm able to make that segue in 10 minutes.
Yeah. It really unfolded beautifully. It really did. And I think that you capture the essence of what preachers do, you know, for a living. What do you think that is? What do you think they do?
Well, they're supposed to spread joy to everybody.
Right.
And in this particular case, it has to be to everybody.
Really? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Pretty and very ambidextrous audience. How do they do that? How does a preacher do that, do you think? I know it's a tough question, but what do you think a preacher does rhetorically or communicatively to try to reach the masses? Can you put that in words?
I think in terms of that, in former terms, it was very narrow-minded. It was very much, you know, you've got to do this, this, and this in order to be saved and gain salvation.
Yep.
Nowadays, it's more or less, no, you have to be more accepting. You know, one of the biggest scriptures that God says, even in the Bible, Jesus' greatest scripture is like, love God above all things, but love your fellow man as you do yourself.
Just a beautiful golden rule lesson that we so often forget. You know, Calvin, I said at the outset that the first story on tonight's show would be told by not an individual, but by a village.
Yeah.
And this is such a great example of as I said earlier, an ensemble performance. Mm-hmm. But it's really a very richly collaborative process. And a director is so essential to a play's storytelling than most might think. Tell us about the director as storyteller.
Definitely. The director as a storyteller, first of all, you have to, well, first you think that it's a great honor to be able to direct something that someone else has written. It's, you know, you kind of think about, like, let's say if like a writer had a baby and then that writer gives you their baby. You know, it's kind of like they're expecting you to do something great with that baby because people want their babies protected. So I kind of relate that to the way that a lot of writers possibly could feel about the things that they write. You have to take their baby and you have to bring it to life on a stage.
Wow,
you know, you have to tap into your creativity. You know, you want the writer to come and have those aha moments where it's like, oh, wow, I wrote this and this is what it looks like on stage. You know, they may see a light or they may see a movement or they may see a gesture that they didn't really think about when they were writing their work. And that's the job of the director, to make that writer have those aha moments and feel really proud.
You know, Calvin, I've been teaching for almost 41 years and this is no hyperbole. That is unquestionably one of the best explanations of director as storyteller as I have ever heard.
Oh, cool.
Right.
Thanks.
I swear to God, the guy right next to me, that's the truth. I'm just letting you know.
Hey, we'll
that is unbelievable.
Then, right?
But let me open this up to all of you. It strikes me that while the story is about Hurricane Harvey, you know, it's about so much more. Tell us about the meaning of the story. Maybe there's multiple meanings, but is there one general parable that we need to really focus on?
I feel like God allows him to see himself. And I think I use that as, you know, personally, because it's not always, because he gave us clear direction, but he also gave us the direction for us to see ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's what he was, you know, doing in this situation.
Yeah, really digging deep, real reflective
yes,
moments.
Sir.
Fernando used a lot of comedy in this particular instance.
Yeah.
But
cool.
The comedy actually sits in your craw a lot easier
let me tell you something. I was thinking about what Mark Twain always said, which is, show me someone who knows what's funny and I'll show you someone who knows what isn't.
Wow.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So it's pretty intense. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's pretty much it. Is that you use comedy to tell a story.
Incredible.
And actually, that story will stick with you for a long time to come.
Humor and truth, just like pastors, just like having a baby and being a parent.
Yeah, great metaphors.
And truth is what it means.
Really, really pretty magnificent. Yeah, you know, story, as most of us know it, storytelling, I should say, as most of us know it, is a lot different from a theatrical setting. You know who David Rainey is,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
David Rainey,
friend
of ours, and he's a great friend of the show. Great. He's so super. He was on after Rachel maybe a year or two, and I remember him pacing the studio.
Wow.
I said, David, what's what are you doing? What do you want, a Valium? What's the matter with you? He says, I'm really nervous. I said, how can you possibly be nervous? You're an incredible actor. He said, you know why I'm nervous. I said, no, I don't. He says, think about it. I said, ah, okay. So you've never really told a story before? He said, no, actually not the way that you want me to. He said, I am very able to tell other people's stories. I can put myself in another persona. Wow. But you're asking me to do something that is extraordinarily raw and very real and amazingly authentic. Yeah. I've got to tell a story about something that I've experienced. And that really forces you to dig deep. And I'll never forget that. It was a fabulous show, as you might imagine. And he talked about his sister, and he talked about some pretty poignant details that I can't believe he was able to do so expressively. But I'll never forget that night. And we talked about the difference between individual storytelling and theater. And how different it is in many ways. But storytelling is a little bit different in a theatrical setting. Theater molds a story differently. What do you guys think about that? How does it mold it differently?
Definitely the use of the ensemble speaks differently, right? Yeah. Everybody shares in the journey. So each actor, I have my own journey, and usually it's pretty deep and real and cathartic for me, but it only truly exists because I have the rest of the ensemble and the audience to be with me.
I love it.
As a cast, we gel as a group. I mean, we start off not knowing each other, and we go through to get through this process together, and we become like family.
I mean, none of us are as good as all of us, right? In order to create this story. It takes it all.
And I think in theater, even if you do a one-person show and you're telling a story, as in a one-person show, you've got all of those other elements usually in theater, and you are becoming someone else. Whereas storytelling, it's me, like David said, that raw me telling that story and hanging out on the outside.
No matter how you cut it, storytelling really rocks. So we have to promote it, and we have to give people an opportunity to understand its power, whether it be in theater or in another context. I know that, Rachel, I promised you that the crew would be out of here. It's 8:28 almost, and you've got a dress rehearsal to catch. But before you go, tell our listeners when and where they can see the Script Writers Houston 10x10 Showcase.
Yes, the 28th annual Script Writers Houston is September 13, 14, and 15, and then September 20, 21, and 22. So that's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and next week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, at 7:30 p.m. each night at Company on Stage, who's graciously allowing us to be in their space at 4930 West Belfort, Houston, Texas, in the Salem Evangelical Lutheran Church.
Beautiful. And I'm going to ask Tatiana. She's great at this. We're going to put this on our Facebook and information. So we get to reinforce it, and you guys will be on YouTube as well. We're going to make sure of that. Awesome. You know, we want you back. I know you wear a lot of different hats, all of you do, and we wanted to learn more about you, but we're going to do that some other time. We're not dropping a bomb and running for cover. We're going to get you guys back here. In the meantime, you guys rock. You absolutely are fabulous. This was a treat and a surprise for me.
Excellent. Come out and see the rest of them.
I thank you. I will. I will. And I thank you so much for coming here tonight.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right. All right. We're going to get Sarah back in here. And Tatiana, why don't you go ahead and just tell us a little bit about life after I first thank Rachel, Patrick, Dylan, who wasn't here, but we want to thank him anyway, and Kelvin for taking the time to come on the show and share a riveting and provocative story. And now I'm going to let Tatiana take over for the next couple of minutes so we can turn off the mic in our studio and let Rachel, Patrick, and Dylan, in mythical form, he's not here, but Kelvin, slip out. He might be here. God might have brought him here in some some whisperish form. I mean, I don't know. I don't know about you guys anymore. You're just too good to rule out. In the meantime, Tatiana, tell us what we've got in store in our storytelling world.
Well, it's my time to shine now, isn't it?
It is.
Well, the Houston Storytellers Guild, it meets the fourth Tuesday of every month, located at Temple Emanuel at 1500 Sunset. You can come and enjoy the stories, or you can tell a story of your own. The Houston Storytellers Guild is where you'll find many Houston storytellers, enjoying an intimate community of storytellers, learning about the craft from each other, and practicing a few stories of your own. The Guild also has a lot of cool stuff going on right now, you guys. Like on Saturday, September 22nd, Drs. Hank Rubicek and Michael Winters are going to be offering a storytelling workshop focusing on personal narratives. The workshop runs from 9 a.m. to noon, and it will be held at the Classical Theater Company. You can learn more by visiting thehoustonstorytellers.org. And while you're on the Houston Storytellers website, check out also their annual Spooky Ghost Stories event. That's coming up in October in the Heights. And this spooktacular event is going to be on Saturday, October.
Did you just make that up, spooktacular?
No, I didn't. But I just love saying spooky so much. Yeah. Okay. It's a millennial thing. What can I say?
Yeah. Yes.
It's for adults and kids like me of all ages who love to be spooked. www.houstonstorytellers.org is also the best place to find an archive of all of our past So What's Your Story programs, all the way back from 2008. Just click on the radio program tab and you'll see all the menu of all of our shows featuring over a whopping 1,000 great stories.
A thousand? Yeah,
a thousand.
It's really like more like 500, but it'll be a thousand eventually, like in another 11 years. But thank you for the optimism. I just want, what was the last time you trick or treated? I'm just curious.
Do I really have to say?
Yeah. I know. You see, I trick or treated at your age. I just pretended to be a kid.
Oh, yeah.
I think I can still get away with it.
Yeah, I know. You probably can.
I get ID'd at the movies all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Sure. Yeah. Don't forget our friends at the Moth, where tellers from all over town meet to tell tales on a defined theme on the second Tuesday of the month. Last night, the theme was education. And I was there, and I had a good time. I told a story, so did Mary. Eric Heen, who's been on the show several times. It was a great, 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 great night. And next week, my guest is going to be Greg Donnelly from Donnelly Khakis. It's kind of an interesting story. Mm-hmm. And Harwood Taylor, who's been on before, from Gremillion Art Studio. These are two successful entrepreneurs. And they're going to be telling stories that will capture the inspiration that fueled their success, always serving up some unique topspins on personal themes on So What's Your Story, Pacifica, Fuel for Peace, only on KPFT 90.1 FM. Also, next Wednesday is our own Greg Audell's birthday, but he's so young that he aggravates the hell out of us, so we're not going to do anything about it. Happy birthday, Greg, and we're going to get him here next week to say so. Now, back to some stories. My guest for this segment is Sarit Manjalouri. Did I pronounce that correctly?
That's pretty good.
Pretty good?
Yeah,
because I'm a speech professor. If I screw that up, man, I'm out of business. Although I am anyway. I'm retired. Okay. Now, Sarit moved to Houston a little over a year ago. And during that time, he experienced everything from a fear of drowning in both Hurricane Harvey and in the Frio River, not to mention the adrenaline rush of trying to commute to work during rush hour on a bicycle. Now, these stories have serious and even scary components, but Sarit manages to find humor in just about everything. Sarit, welcome to What's Your Story.
Thank you.
It's great to see you, and yep. I knew who you were as soon as I walked in.
That's right.
And it's great to see you again. I've seen you with the Moth at least once.
Yes.
I know that.
Yep.
And it's so great to have you, because you are a fabulous teller, and even more importantly, your insights that come from the stories you tell is something that we want to sort of delve into a little bit, and that's really the essence of some of your wonderful stories that we're going to hear in just a moment, the one that you told at the Moth in particular. You know, when we talk a little bit about tonight, and we talk about the kind of trials and tribulations that came from Hurricane Harvey, I think that you as a playwright and as a storyteller, because I've heard you tell the stories of the Moth, and I've heard you talk about your work with Playback Theater. But I know you also have a day job and a family. So before we start delving into your incredible story with a number of different unique topspins, tell us a little bit about how you spend your day.
Well, you know, there's a large portion of it at work, and then I live with my parents.
Mm-hmm.
My wife, we have two kids and three cats. So
You are a physician.
I am a physician.
Tell us, where do you practice?
I am a resident at the Baylor College of Medicine in psychiatry.
Magnificent.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's all sorts of jokes. What are you, nuts? Right. But yeah, okay. But other than that, yes. Very good.
Yeah, there's no shortage of jokes.
There's no shortage of jokes, I know. I think that psychiatrists and I think probably proctologists are the ones who have the most amazing jokes about what they do. And you have to have a sense of humor.
Yeah, yeah.
On a serious note, that sounds like an oxymoron, but you have to have a sense of humor, right?
Yeah, I think you do in order to cope with it. And actually, It's funny you mention that. I know someone who wrote a thesis about doctor jokes.
No kidding.
Yeah, and he now performs.
Well, they have to be an anecdote for stress and for a number of things, right?
Exactly.
So, what's the essence of a doctor joke? What's good about it?
So, well, he went specialty by specialty.
And
then,
Ooh.
He actually left psychiatry out of that because there was so much to talk about. He couldn't get it all in this one.
That is amazing.
Yeah. So there's room for me to grow in there.
That is amazing. Yeah. That's good. So you're really essentially becoming a comedian as you cultivate your psychiatry.
Indeed. Yeah. That's the goal.
There you go. I love it. You know, Houston has so many wonderful and diverse theaters, and it's hard to keep up with all of them. But playback theater is not one that immediately comes to mind, but it should. Tell us about it.
So I joined last year after coming here, and essentially the crux of it is it's improvisational theater in which the audience members tell a story, and then from that story the actors kind of reenact what they believe to be the most salient points in terms of events and the emotions that are elicited from it. It incorporates elements of improv, storytelling, and psychodrama, which I think is really a neat intersection of things.
Yeah. Interesting in a relationship, yeah.
And we're actually having a performance in the Jung Theater next Friday.
Really?
Yeah.
Fabulous. We want to know more about that if we have the time. Keep that in mind. Now, your first story is one that you told of the moth, and Warren loved it, and I'm excited because I don't remember if I heard it. I don't think I was there that night with the thing that was caught. I don't remember. But it's about your baptism into the Houston car commuting scene. Is that right?
Indeed.
Is that good?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Except that you were on a bicycle?
Yes.
So why don't we just kind of ride into the story?
Sure.
All right.
I moved to Houston a year ago to start a job as a resident doctor. I knew about the summers and learned firsthand about the hurricanes. But the winters, I heard, could be quite pleasant. And so I looked forward to biking to a clinic about 10 miles southwest of my home near the medical center. Google Maps, which provides bicycling directions, told me I could use the Braes Bayou Trail most of the way. On the morning of February 12th, my first day, the temperature was 37 degrees. It was overcast and damp. There are hardy individuals who believe that these are the perfect biking conditions, just as seasoned marathon runners complain when it is mild, and prefer to be sleeveless and frigid simultaneously. I submit that my South Asian jean stock prepared me exclusively for warm climates. I have a disproportionate surface area to volume ratio, being 6 feet tall and 150 pounds soaking wet. I can't grow a beard and am fast becoming bald. Heat retention is not my forte. But I prepped for the cold and headed off anyway. Things went fine until I reached a metal barrier at the Buffalo Speedway intersection. I scanned the area and determined that the only alternative was to bike alongside car traffic on Braeswood, an uneven road with no cycling lane. So I passed to the side of the obstruction and continued along the trail. A few hundred yards later, the path abruptly ended. I trudged my bike through the ankle-deep mud until I reached Braeswood. I took up the right lane of the road and tried to maintain a fast pace, but my feet kept slipping off the pedals. Drivers honked as they flew by. After a couple of treacherous miles, I neared the 610 intersection. Google Maps, irritated with my route recalculations, suggested that I take the on-ramp. I declined. Fortunately, the trail opened at that disheartening moment, and I was back on track. The subsequent part of the journey was pleasant by comparison. Without the imminent threat of death by car, the harsh headwind, snot freezing onto my lips, an odd duality of feeling sweaty throughout my core while frigid at my extremities was really quite exhilarating. The Braes Bayou Trail splits after Gessner, and I wound up at what Google Maps calls a, quote, asphalt gravel road, end quote. There was an abrupt change in environment from pavement to open field. As I looked for a path, I saw upturned shopping carts, strewn refuse, and a robust variety of flora and fauna able to survive a subtropical climate in winter. On this particular day, the fauna included wild dogs. They were large and intimidating even from a distance of 20 or 30 feet. And once they began barking, I knew that I was spotted and had to act quickly. Turning around would put me further from work. So I barreled ahead directly towards the sharp teeth and the enraged eyes. One turned his head and yelped, presumably to call for reinforcements. There were two of them, big, probably Rottweilers. They could easily maul me, but if they wanted to wait for help, I had a small window to escape. I crunched down on the gear shifter and pumped on the pedals. I saw the path, partially paved with loose gravel lining the side. It was nevertheless a far better choice for speed and safety. I hooked away and saw the dogs for the last time. The street was a few football field lengths ahead. I sucked in a deep breath and I hit a pothole as the bike's frame shook. Then I saw a dip, perhaps a 2-foot divot. I could jump in and risk a crash or slow down and ride through it, but risk getting attacked. An image flashed in my mind of the General Lee, the notorious car from the Dukes of Hazzard, flying over Sheriff Roscoe and his inept crew. Now was my chance to make a 21st century multicultural update, to live out the fantasy I had as an 8-year-old. The decision was made. I picked up the front tire, pulled on the handlebar, and was airborne. I hit the ground hard but upright. I stuck that damn landing. And so I let out a muffled yee-haw through the snot coating my throat. I raced on the street, stopped, and turned around. Nothing. I had dusted them. Boss Hogg and the sheriff were foiled again. I arrived to work a few blocks later, reeking of B.O., drenched in sweat, but feeling as if I had just climbed Everest. The ride home was much less eventful, though I was completely exhausted. I tried one more time to bike to work. I again got to the barrier, but this time saw detour signs leading me to the sidewalk along Braeswood and against traffic. However, it was trash day, and thus garbage bins obstructed the path. I tried sliding between the containers and the road, but slipped and landed on Braeswood with cars heading towards me at 30 or 40 miles an hour. I threw myself and my bike on the sidewalk, and the rims were completely bent. I carried the bike to a strip mall a few blocks ahead and began tinkering with it. A friendly man offered to bang the rims into shape with a hammer he had in his car. However, the mall's parking lot also doubled as a dog walking area, and the Good Samaritan was accompanied by a pit bull. I instead called my wife for a ride, and after an admonishment, drove the rest of the month.
That is a great story. I did not hear that one before, and I'm sorry I didn't. That is a great story. I love the details. You know, you really paint some pretty incredible pictures. Have you done any writing in your life?
Just as an amateur.
Just as an amateur? Yeah, really? Right. I got to ask you, before we talk about the story a little bit, what prompted you to go from being a kindergarten teacher to a psychiatrist? And the reason I ask is because, you know, you could have gone into child psychology, but you wanted to go to medical school, you wanted to become a psychiatrist. Is there a correlation, or is it just something that you said, I'm not doing this anymore? Well, what was the jump?
Probably some degree of masochism is involved, but I think that... Overall, there's a lot of the...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, you can ask my family about that. Right. Yeah. They have to do a lot of stuff.
Oh, they're coming on next week. Yes. Yeah, we're definitely having them on. Right. We want to find out exactly where you're coming from. Absolutely. But what? Any inspiration?
The mental health issues that my kids were presenting with, I think, were really... It was difficult to address as a teacher, and I think they were fundamental to their ability to achieve.
Wow.
And then when I became a parent myself, I got it eventually.
Yeah.
Like how much
and
anxiety
that is an impressive insight, my friend. That really is. And you felt helpless that you were a teacher and you wanted to do something more.
Yes. And I didn't have the skill set to kind of address the issues they had.
That is pretty magnificent. That is pretty magnificent. Thank you. I know that was a hard question. I know that was. You know, your first story, I know that, you know, you told that at the Moth, and I know there are a lot of lessons in that narrative that you just shared. If there's a single most important parable, something we should learn from that story, what is it that we should take from it?
Well, there is an absurdity to life, I think, particularly in Houston, and I think accepting it as it comes is really kind of where the joy comes. And so this bike ride, while at times was very scary, I think was also exhilarating. And I try to really kind of think about those things, particularly as I raise my own kids as well.
Yeah, yeah. And what should we remember from that? How would you transfer that to us?
To think, even in the most challenging circumstances, that there is some meaning and joy that can be extracted from it.
Very, very good. Very, very good. If you're joining us, I'm Hank Rubicek, and this is What's Your Story on 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. My guest in this segment is Dr. Sarit Manjaluri. And, you know, I wanted to thank Warren. I wanted to shout out to Warren, if he's listening right now, for capturing tonight's talent, because this is a great show. And it's I don't know. I'm having a ball. I'm having more fun than the law allows, I think. But this is great. Now, your next story describes a ritual that many Houston families do over the summer, an inner tube ride down the Frio River. It's something I've never done, but I understand that many, Houston, look, my idea of roughing it is when room service is late, okay? So don't ask me to take a tube down the river, please. Except that in your case, there's one little problem. You don't know how to swim, right?
Yes.
Okay, shame, shame. Everybody will know your name, but you did this anyway. So borrowing from Hunter Thompson and Fear and Loathing in Vegas, as a newcomer to Texas, you've titled this next story, Fear and Boating in Texas. Share it with us.
Sure. Over Memorial Day weekend, my wife and I took our children, ages 4 and 2, to Garner State Park in Hill Country. In agreeing with her suggestion, tubing on the Frio River, I had neglected to account for the fact that I'm a terrible swimmer. Initially, it didn't seem like a big deal. A lazy ride down a still and densely populated river did not immediately provoke a sense of impending doom. But as we pulled into a parking space adjacent to the dock, a wave of nausea overcame me. I stared ahead of the water, unable to gauge its depth and envision catastrophe. I made a similar hasty decision a year earlier to go sailing with a friend in the San Francisco Bay. I recall thinking that venturing into a large body of seawater without a reasonable ability to swim out of it would result in my death. Yet there I was, a testament to my own stupidity and my friend's charm. He had done a Mormon mission years ago and honed the skill of convincing anyone from the indifferent to the hostile of his importance and faculties. In an attempt to cut my own anxiety, I made some ill-humored jokes that I hadn't yet applied for a life insurance policy, and that my children might grow up fatherless and penury if my friend's confidence exceeded his abilities. He responded with an ebullient cackle and reassured me that he had just qualified as a junior skipper. I felt tempted to ask about the differences between his title and one of higher rank he implied that existed, but quickly determined that learning about the skills he lacked would do nothing for my nerves. In any case, I hadn't heard anyone use the word skipper in any context outside of Gilligan's Island before, and so naturally the TV show's theme song became stuck in my head. And thus we set sail on our tour. I felt terribly vulnerable. I was obliged to trust in the age life jacket my friend found in a dilapidated cupboard, that it would not tear apart at the seams, become unbuckled, or simply not work. I tugged at the straps and chastised myself for not being able to pay attention to the safety instructions he provided earlier. The ringing in my ears and the images of a slow descent to the depths of the bay, where I had become one of many bloated carcasses, crowded my mind. Our first capsizing occurred a few minutes into the journey. A wave rocked us nearly vertically, and I did not shift my body in time to counterbalance the force. I was afloat, the dinghy a few feet away, upright. My skipper was easy to spot, tall and blonde, a striking and welcome contrast to the gray skies. He was already on board and navigating towards me. I bear crawled my way into my seat and plopped down. After a few moments of silence, I encouraged him to convert me into Mormonism, as, after saving my life, I was particularly open to his suggestion. He instead asked how I was doing. I was overwhelmed with emotions. The joy of feeling as if I had cheated death, the sense of accomplishment in facing a chronic fear, wonder and awe in the nature of water itself, that I knew little about its essence despite being entirely dependent upon it. I also experienced the relief of letting go of the tightly held narrative that I controlled my circumstances, that risk and threat were omnipresent and I was alone best equipped to avoid or manage it. It is exhausting to hold on to the illusion of control, and subsequent capsizings reminded me of the freedom that results from accepting life as chaotically as it comes. I attempted to conjure the same feelings as I sat frozen, immune to my children's screams to get out of the car. But tubing down the Frio presented different stressors. We had no adult life jackets and my children were present. The idea of attempting to wrangle flailing toddlers while I struggled to avoid drowning seemed rather unpleasant, to say the least. Eventually, my wife asked me what was wrong, as she had grown tired of trying to pacify the kids. She was sympathetic to my panicked assertions that we would most assuredly die, and proposed that we ditch the tubes and rent paddle boats from the nearby stand, as they came with life jackets. I felt embarrassed to don the jacket, despite paying for it. It was a visible marker of my inadequacy to everyone. Once again, my wife stepped in. She reminded the kids that we wear helmets when riding bikes, and so we'd all wear life jackets on the river. She put one on herself that was unnecessary for her, and then threw one over my head. We outfitted the kids and set off. Where we traversed, the river was no more than 4 or 5 feet deep. While I felt relief, my children were absolutely terrified. My daughter, the older of the two, pointed at seaweed and tadpoles, shouting in a panic that they would attack her. Other areas obscured by shadows could house unknown and scarier things. And how deep was the water? She kept on asking. I knew that responding with an exact answer would only exacerbate fears of drowning. It was over her head, certainly, and so I asked her to place faith in forces beyond her control. It was the same reassurance given to me a year earlier, and I figured that my daughter believed it to be as much malarkey as I did at the time. So I hopped in the water and pulled her off the boat. She screamed, looked around, saw that she was floating, and yelped again, but this time filled with pride and joy. Her brother followed. We spent the next couple of hours overturning the bedrocks, observing small fish as they swum by and floating down the river.
This story introduces us to your family and your struggles to be a young father while dealing with your own personal challenges, like swimming. You almost drowned twice, and yet you wanted to make sure that your children swam, right? I mean, there was no way that you were going to transfer that paralyzing feeling to them, correct?
Yeah.
This is a really hard question, and I apologize if I'm putting you on the spot. How would you describe the sensation of drowning? Have you ever been asked that question?
No. My first inclination is to use my psychiatry training and just ask you, reframe that question towards you. But no, I think that, no, it really does feel like in some way that, your life is sort of, the air is being ripped out of you. And that you're suffocating in this way that is powerless and you're helpless to it.
Yeah. I appreciate you answering that because, you know, you're such a descriptive gentleman. You really are. And frankly, you're one of the best at doing that. And I was just curious because I think it's one of those questions that many people want to know. It's sort of like, you know, describe a afterlife experience. And, you know, we ask people about that quite a bit. But, you know, what I find particularly impressive is the fact that you did not allow your own debilitating experiences, your own paralyzing experiences, to transfer to your children, because it's so easy to do that. It really is. Like, I'm terrified and I'm going to be terrified for you, even if you're not, sort of a thing. You know?
Yeah.
And that's, I find that astonishing in a very positive sense of the word.
I see that, though, in them. I see that terror. They're taking lessons at the Y, you know, now. And my son, the younger one, you can really see that sense of terror on him. And it's a source of motivation for sure to to change things.
But a good thing. I mean, it's a good thing, obviously. Again, Sarah, there are a lot of messages in stories, and I think in yours in particular, because, you know, yours really are sort of meta messages. They're above and beyond the words that we hear. So is there a particular message that you want us to take from that story?
I think we may not know initially the source of motivation of why we do these really challenging tasks. But later on, we can see that it was of real great value, and then we can learn the motivation later. And then, you know, our children are really fantastic sources to kind of push ourselves forward.
You know, Tatiana, let's get your sense of this. You're always good at offering some insights, and we're always interested in hearing your impressions. And I wanted to get your impression of, you know, Sarah's stories, or for that matter, anything about the theme that we discussed earlier about, you know, theater and collaborative storytelling style. You know, we've had a very tight theme tonight, even though the stories have been varied, but they all really do conjure up the same notion, and that is about the human condition and the intricacies about human conditioning in many different ways.
Absolutely right. Mm-hmm. You know, with Sarah's story just now, it reminded me of the time that I also drowned. So really? I can completely understand.
You say that you drowned?
Yes.
I've drowned before.
Well, seriously?
Yes,
you drowned
twice.
And you came back to life?
No, I was...
drowning.
I was drowning.
Well,
I was twice in my life.
I mean, okay.
But
all
I understand how it is, because when you're drowning, you're not only are you suffocating, but you feel like you're being pulled down. Like your body just is kind of giving up on you
right.
at that moment.
So the water is saying, I want you. You may want to live, but I'm going to win kind of a feeling. Is that that's
It's like
that
a tug of war for your life.
Oh, my gosh. That is amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, the world gets tighter and tighter through storytelling. There's no way I would have imagined that anybody sitting 3 feet across the way could relate to that. That is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else? What do you think?
Well, would like to say that, Sarah, you're also a cunning linguistic. I'll say that. And and what was played tonight with the actors, honestly, it was so funny. It was one of the best things I've heard.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
And I heard them right way before the
yes.
show, heard them rehearsing. But my favorite line had to be from Kanye West is in hell, but I don't know. He married a Kardashian.
You know, before we close up shop, I wanted to give you about 30 seconds to talk a little bit about Off Script, which is the storytelling group that meets in the TMC.
Yeah, so it's run through the Baylor College of Medicine.
It's
a group that meets essentially quarterly, and we try to recruit anyone who's interested in storytelling in the medical center to come. And they submit stories, it's on the order of the moth, about 6 minutes or so, and they can get up on stage and perform.
Right.
It.
And, you know, Warren has talked about in the past that the storytelling and medicine are really becoming inextricably related to each other and for all the right reasons. You know, it's really hard to believe that we're out of time because this show really did go fast. This was fun. Sarit Manjulari, you shared stories about Houston's adventures and Texas adventures, about being a commuter, and a dad and a husband, about dodging cars during rush hour and dodging rocks in the Frio River. Your stories touch on perennial themes like resilience and family and the kindness of strangers, or at least new bosses who stop being strangers. And your stories are all about relationships and values and things that matter most. You open your heart. And for that, we thank you so much.
Thank you.
So much.
This is fantastic.
Don't you dare move, because Wild Bill and the Vinyl Avenger are waiting in the wings to share their cool classics to make you a much cooler you. Make 90.1 a part of every day, and while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us every Wednesday at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And you just treasure what you hear. Keep loving great stories, and we're going to keep bringing them to you. This is Hank Rubicek, and along with the entire So What's Your Story team, we are warning you, don't you never forget that it's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.